Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a special online event today called Entering the Sanctuary of the Wild Goddesses and Mystics of Mercy, saying yes to the beloved and receiving the gifts of feminine wisdom. It's an exciting and evocative title, and so I'm really delighted to be with you here today. My name is Stephen Dynan. I'm the founder and CEO of the Shift Network. We're going to get to dive into some really juicy mystical terrain with one of my favorite teachers. Her name is Mirabai Starr, and she's really been at the forefront of integrating wisdom from streams of transformation around the world into a kind of interspiritual whole, and really honoring the mystical traditions, but particularly the women mystics who have often been neglected or marginalized or completely overlooked. And so she's a really deep, profound being who has a playful spirit, and she has marries that scholarly depth with real transformational teaching rigor as well. So I think we're in for a real treat today. So welcome, Mirabai.
Thank you, Stephen. So good to be with you and with all of you.
Great. Well, Wild Goddesses and Mystics of Mercy. I know we're going to have a whole upcoming program on this with you, 7 weeks. So that's going to be a real treat. And we'll talk a little bit about that towards the end of the hour. But it's an evocative title, and we're so used to thinking of spirituality as a little self-serious and a little kind of inward and contemplative and wise. But I like the Wild Goddesses and Mystics of Mercy. It's a fun, playful framing. So maybe share a little bit about your own journey into the more feminine mystics and what you discovered versus, you know, you've integrated so much from the more masculine traditions as well. But like particularly the feminine mystics, why are they so important now?
Wow. It's so up in the culture at large, isn't it? That the feminine voice is rising and she has something to say. And as you mentioned, I've been exploring multiple spiritual traditions, just about all of them, the major ones for sure, for many, many years. And they are dominated by a kind of masculine paradigm, often having to do with perfection, like mean, unfair, idealized versions of what perfection is, and also transcendence, like transcending this relative world as being some kind of illusion, right? But the feminine mystics and goddesses as well, those wisdom beings that weren't necessarily people, have something vital to offer us about embodiment, about re-sacralizing life in this world, in community, among each other, in the kind of messy but glorious catastrophe and beauty of this world. So I've been digging deep to find their treasures, and I'm finding them, and I'd love to share them.
Mm. Well, how has it shifted your own life to go on this journey of discovery of these wilder sides?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that I really bought into that masculine paradigm of transcendence and perfection for many years. And I'm not knocking it completely, by the way. There is great value in some of those teachings about detachment and about discernment and honing our spiritual skillfulness. And there is also something about bearing witness to the illusion and being able to detach from being caught up sometimes in everything we think, right? So there is great value to some of those masculine methodologies and wisdom teachings. But what has changed for me is this blessing of life in the world as being holy, as being imbued with the sacred. You know, it's called in theology panentheism, not pantheism, where everything is God. Panentheism, where the divine infuses every particle of being. And to me, that's a deeply feminine insight, not only an insight, but a call to action, so that everything, nothing is left out. Nothing is considered to be sacrilegious as opposed to the sacred, but that everything becomes a mirror of the divine in the world. And therefore, we treat each other and the earth herself as holy, as valuable, as worthy of our deepest love and devotion.
I think that's so important, and it's certainly true not only of the feminine mystics, but a lot of the indigenous traditions really have held that kind of a sacred reverence for Earth that really is one of the missing ingredients that we've mostly inherited in a lot of the more transcendent traditions.
Exactly. This is nothing new to the indigenous people of the world. This is just a remembering of the wisdom that we collectively know. And the indigenous people have always seen the earth as feminine, as the mother. Now, that doesn't always translate culturally into respect for, let alone reverence for, women. But there, so I think there's a bridge that needs to be built between these primordial spiritual insights and action in the world in terms of how we actually treat women and girls, and therefore a very clear connection with how we treat the earth.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the wild aspect. Give us a few examples of some wild goddesses and why it's important to reclaim those qualities now in our modern world.
Yeah, well, the obvious one, of course, is Kali in the Hindu tradition. I know that the Shift Network has done a great job of shining some light on, so I'm not going to take too much time with Kali, but the main thing to remember about the Divine Mother in the Hindu tradition, who has many names, but the most beloved form is the goddess Kali, is that it's not like she looks like some beautiful, radiant, calm woman sitting in repose like a fashion model spiritual style. You know, it's Kali is smoky and rough. And sure, her eyes are blazing and her breasts are bare and her mouth is dripping with blood and she has a skull of severed heads around her neck and she's carrying a sword and she is on fire with the desire to liberate her children, that is all of us, from the illusion of separation from the divine. That's the main illusion, right? That we are separate from each other and separate from our source, which is love. And so Kali is the most loving and most beloved of all the goddesses in the Hindu tradition. And there are Dakinis in the Tibetan tradition who are all about embodiment, but they're also, you know, playful and mysterious, and they're really good at pulling the rug out from under our preconceived notions of what spirituality means. And I think that's what's up with these goddesses and many of the women mystics that I've investigated who are truly subversive, they're really troublemakers, holy troublemakers, is that they're shaking up the existing power structure and the paradigms that exist, and they're making fun of it, and they're shifting our spiritual landscape so that we can see new vistas and access new territory that is life-giving, that is wise, that is powerful and empowering.
When you were speaking, I was thinking of the pink pussy hats at the Women's March and this kind of subversive, playful, feminine spiritual impulse that was like evident with those around the world with those hats. And let me speak a little bit about the Western traditions, because I think we have generally in the most of the kind of, Christianity and Judaism, and we've often focus more on a more subdued version of the feminine, but we have like deeper roots. There's some wilder goddesses if you dig deeper back in the Western traditions as well, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the Shekhinah in Judaism, in mystical Judaism, well, she's not just in mystical Judaism, but that's where we find her when we start looking. But the Shekhinah is the indwelling feminine face of the divine. She's not like the consort of the dude God. She is God in feminine. She is God infusing everything. Now, I'm not always attracted to the G word, God. Sometimes I think growing up in an agnostic Jewish family, I developed a certain suspicion to God language. But we could translate that word for any other number of words, spirit, the sacred. But the Shekhinah is about the divine infusing all that is, all form. It's the formless breaking into an infinite number of forms and radiating from within all of our experience, from all of creation. And the thing about the Shekhinah is that she too is somewhat subversive. She shakes it up. in some ways, she is the spirit of the Sabbath, which is a quality of deep rest and sanctuary and refuge, mercy even. But on the other hand, she is about sexuality. She's about connection with nature. She's about change. She's about longing, deep spiritual yearning, and a sense of disconnectedness that in and of itself, in crying out for connection, creates connection. So the mystical path is always about paradox. It's the longing that is in its very expression, union with that which we long for, which can always be translated back again and again to love.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about the mercy side of the equation. So there's the, what's that?
Well, then there's Mary Magdalene in the Christian tradition.
Oh, well, there we go. I don't want to cut you off from Mary Magdalene.
Well, I, along with I'm sure so many of you, am utterly fascinated with Mary Magdalene and always have been. And she also represents that wildness that you mentioned, Stephen, because she refused to play by the boys' rules. And as a result, she was exiled from the Christian story and is only beginning to be rediscovered and rescued and reintegrated as a vital missing piece of the Christian mythos or the Christian love story. And I don't just mean the love story between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, but the love story between our souls and the beloved and the divine, what's called the beloved in the Sufi tradition. But Mary Magdalene was, she didn't apologize for who she was or what she cared about. And what she cared about was being with the beloved. And so the beloved, of course, took the form of Jesus. And there's a lot of speculation about whether Jesus and Mary Magdalene were married. I think it seems highly likely that they were. But that to me is not nearly as interesting an issue or a question as Mary Magdalene's place at the table of the early band of Jesus and his followers. I mean, there's mounting evidence that she was not just on the periphery of Jesus's circle of companions, but was at the center of that circle with him, and that they were partners and equals in the prophetic task of speaking the teachings of love and spreading those teachings in such a way, like sparks that would take fire and blaze throughout the millennia. As they have those teachings of love, but he couldn't have done it without her. I think that they were co-equals, and there was something about Mary's passion that again was infused with love longing. Like when they were separated, she would do anything she could to get to him. If he was dining with the rich and powerful men, she would break into the hall where the elite masculine club was meeting, and she, you know, this the famous story of her breaking open a jar of priceless nard, and in the middle of Jesus meeting with the important men of the community, she pours this beautiful tincture on his bare feet, and then washes them, and then dries them with her hair. Now, I don't care whether that story actually happened or not, but there is something so deeply erotic and revolutionary and courageous and wild that I carry with me as a kind of inspiration as I, too, step into the halls of the privileged, powerful men in this world and bring with me not some kind of co-equal intellectual toolkit, but the passion of my love, the beauty of poetry, my long, wild hair, metaphorically speaking.
Well, I think Mary Magdalene is clearly, she's so key to understanding where things have, I think, gotten out of balance in Western culture, because like she had this pivotal role, as you're saying, and a real demonstration. And if we could have honored that, we would have inherited a more balanced picture of masculine and feminine. Yet she got marginalized. She got, you know, diminished and literally cut out of paintings. And so I'd love you to just reflect a little on what that did to kind of Western women's ability to embrace the kind of like the full spectrum of the feminine in their own mystical life.
Well, exactly. I think you've just said it, Stephen. When we cut off any vital element of our collective unified being, we suffer. And I think that there was a violence when we cut the Shekhinah out of Judaism, when we cut Mary Magdalene out of the Christian story, and we suffer from the effects of that violent act. It's like we, you know, when Jacob wrestled all night with the angel of God, and in the morning was renamed Israel in the Torah story, in the so-called Old Testament. The thing about Jacob is that he was wounded in that encounter, in that with in Islam is called that jihad, not meaning holy war, but encounter, striving, grappling with the truth of the divine. And we emerge from those struggles often carrying wounds, limping, if you will. And our scars become actually a source of power, but only when we can stop hiding them and shine the light on them and name them. And so in some ways, and I'm having this kind of epiphany right now as I'm speaking to you. I love when that happens, and it happens with you a lot, Stephen. That now I think if we can take a look at the wounds of disconnecting the feminine from the story of enlightenment or salvation that we find in both the Eastern and the Judeo-Christian traditions, enlightenment or liberation or awakening in the Eastern traditions, salvation in the Western traditions, if we can take a good naked look at where we have caused harm to our collective heart and soul, and honor those wounds, honor those scars, and make an effort to redress the harm that is done by including the feminine in such a way that may look to the dudes in charge like an imbalance in the opposite direction for a while. You know, I think that healing can happen throughout the sphere of the human family that will impact not only our collective humanity, but the way in which we steward the earth, who is also deeply wounded and crying out. You know, the way I feel about the earth is that she has taken care of us all along with great good humor, our sister Mother Earth, as St. Francis calls her. And now she's moaning. She's in pain. And it's our turn. I think we've matured enough. You know, like children, we don't just need the mother to take care of us and keep feeding us endlessly from her own breasts anymore. It's our turn to step up and tend our mother who's been so loving to us.
Well, that obviously connects directly to the theme of the mystics of mercy and how the quality of mercy and deep compassionate care for the world and for the downtrodden, for the people who have been abused or marginalized, that's really also at the heart of the feminine mystical impulse. And I'd love for you to share more about why that is and talk about some of the goddesses and mystics that embody that.
Mm. Yeah, I see two aspects of this mercy piece right now that are so important and so needed. One is that we need the qualities of mercy that we see reflected in mystics who are so tender and loving, like Julian of Norwich or Thérèse of Lisieux in the Christian tradition, and they exist throughout all of the great spiritual traditions, as well as goddesses like Kuan Yin and Tara, we need to look to their teachings of mercy or their example of mercy and compassion and carry that into the world. Whereas you so beautifully say, those on the margins are suffering and the earth herself is crying out. Also, though, I think right now we need to drink from that cup of mercy ourselves, because so many of us are feeling so broken and shattered even by the pain of the world. When we look at what's happening in the human family, when we look at what's happening in the climate, it's unbearably painful, you know, to take a real radical, authentic look at the truth of suffering around us, not to mention in our own communities, our families, perhaps our own bodies. And so I think we are deeply in need of access to this wellspring of tenderness, of care, of comfort that we can find in the teachings of the women mystics and in the energies of these women wisdom beings, these feminine wisdom beings, these goddesses right now. And so I'm really interested in creating spaces among women, especially, but men, if they're interested, that become spaces of refuge, of sanctuary. You know, in the teachings of the Buddha on taking refuge in the three jewels of Buddhism, remember, are taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. That is taking refuge in the exemplars of walking a way of awakening and love. Taking refuge in the Dharma is drawing from all the wisdom teachings for me across the spiritual traditions, and for me especially right now, the wisdom of women, the wisdom teachings of women. But the third jewel of refuge in the Buddhist tradition, I feel is the most important, and I know that I'm in good company in saying so, and that is taking refuge in the Sangha. Sangha being the circle of spiritual companions who gather, either physically or virtually, around the world to make a space of refuge, make a space of sanctuary, have access, create access to the wisdom teachings for everybody. And so cultivating spiritual companionship right now, I think, is vital for us all. And doing that in a feminine way, that is a way that is relational, that is mutually empowering, that isn't about some powerful, privileged man or even woman taking that seat of the man, sitting up separate from the rest of us, dispensing their goodies, their spiritual goodies, and the rest of us passively taking it in. I think that's over. I mean, maybe I sound like a hypocrite because here I am teaching for the Shift Network and elsewhere around the world, actually, where I'm sitting in a certain seat, you know, and I'm sharing certain teachings. But that's just me as one of many people in this vast circle of love, of feminine wisdom, who each have something to offer, and it's equal, and it's equally value and vital and needed.
Mm, beautiful. Let's bring in, I want to bring in Kuan Yin. We mentioned this in the description for today as sort of our Eastern archetype of mercy and compassion, and maybe how you can connect with her as a living archetypal energy that can infuse our paths and practice.
Well, beautiful. You know, one of the things we see in the images of Kuan Yin is that she's often holding out her hands, and from her hands, mercy is pouring onto all of us. I love that image of Kuan Yin. I have her in my garden. I have her on my desk. I have her in various physical spaces so I can see her holding out her palms with mercy emanating and pouring from her fingertips. And I take great comfort in that. What I think a lot of people don't know about Kuan Yin is that she was originally a human being. A woman, actually a girl. She died young, like so many great wisdom beings. A girl named Mao Shan. And she was born into privilege, again, like so many great saints who gave it all up to embark on a spiritual path and a path of service to others. And she wanted from a young age to just have a spiritual and contemplative life, but her family wanted her to get married and carry on their lineage. And she finally convinced them to send her to a convent where she could engage in contemplative practices. And her father, to punish her, had her sent to a convent, worked out a deal with the abbess there that she would basically torture the young Miao Shan by giving her all the grungiest work in the monastery. And they figured the worst possible job they could give her was to tend to the dying, basically a hospice job. Couldn't have been more perfectly suited for this young girl who was deeply compassionate. And she tended the dying with great loving care. And when her father found out that she not only was not suffering in the convent like he hoped she would, but was actually thriving, he ordered her execution. And this is not uncommon in these wisdom stories across the spiritual traditions, that families turn on family members who are loving and dedicated to cultivating contemplative life and service in the world, right? And they want to wipe them out. So he sent an executioner to kill her. And she looked up at the guy as he stood with his axe over her head and said, "I forgive you. You will carry no karmic baggage from this violent act. It is not your fault." And as he, with tears in his eyes, dropped the axe over her head, it shattered and she didn't die. But it turns out that then she was transported by spirits to an island where she then sat in meditation for millennia and liberated all sentient beings as a bodhisattva. But the important thing is then she became this supernatural source of mercy and tenderness for all of us here on earth who are struggling to live lives of compassion, of integration, of body and spirit, and that she is available to us with her cup of mercy whenever we have trouble, most of all, forgiving ourselves. Because self-forgiveness is probably one of the greatest obstacles on the path, not only to awakening, but to being loving, compassionate beings in the world. If we can't forgive those dark pockets of our own story, it's very difficult to act with true compassion in the world. And Kuan Yin becomes a source of mercy and an impetus for self-forgiveness.
Love for you to share a little bit about how we can practice connecting in a deeper way with these goddess figures. So I think that you've described very eloquently the qualities of being in the stories, but so how do you actually integrate goddess practice into your spiritual practice so that you're taking in those qualities and embodying them and creating a deeper relationship?
Well, for me, one of the most powerful ways to connect with these non-physical beings who nevertheless I feel have embodied qualities that we can experience in our own bodies is through the creative arts. For me, creativity and the arts are a beautiful pathway to connection with these metaphysical energies. And so whether it's writing poetry or prose, in my case, kind of a combination of poetry and prose, this kind of lyrical prose poem stuff that I do, I often also write prayers. You know, it's like we're conditioned to think only the ordained, usually masculine representatives of the various spiritual traditions are authorized to create prayers. But we are all worthy of blessing each other and composing prayers that are offerings to the divine in the forms of these various wisdom beings. So I'm all for writing prayers to the various goddesses, and I do so quite often, creating works of art, whether visual art or music, or engaging in creative acts and dedicating them to the spirit of these particular wisdom beings so that they are somehow included in the creative offering. And to me, all artistic endeavors are offerings of love to love. And And so, and studying and reading the great scriptures of the world and dispensing with the bullshit. Like there's a lot of dark inheritances from the world's wisdom traditions across the board, East and West, that need to be rejected. And so it takes a certain kind of discernment to hone in on the life-giving teachings of love across the board in the spiritual traditions. And so there are great wisdom teachings about the feminine that often require deep digging and getting rid of a lot of extraneous material that not only doesn't serve the reemergence of the great divine feminine who we so urgently need right now, but actually serve to obscure her further. So those kinds of investigations of the world's great wisdom scriptures and some of the new wisdom literature that's emerging are also wonderful ways to connect. And finally, meditation and visualizations. You know, being able to turn inward and picture these wisdom beings. I like to do it in the heart cave, the Hridayam, the center of the chest. It helps to investigate them first and find images that you can connect with, and then visualize them in the center of the chest, and then feel those wisdom beings expanding to fill the heart cave and beyond, filling the outline of our own bodies, and then expanding, taking us along with them out to the farthest reaches of the universe. This is a visualization practice that Ram Dass taught me when I was a teenager that I have used ever since in many decades since then, of visualizing these wisdom beings, especially the feminine wisdom beings, inhabiting my own being and then taking me with them and expanding through the cosmos, radiating, and then bringing that back, that light back into the center of my own being where it remains alive like a flame.
Beautiful. How about, we haven't talked about Gaia yet. We've talked about Mary Magdalene and Kuan Yin and Gaia as an actual, you know, feminine embodiment of a sort of a goddess figure, if you will, for all of us, that we depend completely on her. She's our mother, but actually you can relate as a spiritual practice in a deeper way to her, sort of an archetypal way. I'd love for you to share more about that.
Yeah, in some ways, I think you said it, Stephen, that Gaia is the quintessential feminine wisdom being that is the mother of us all, the great mother, Mother Earth herself. And, you know, the Gaia theory is predicated on this understanding that the Earth is an entity, is a being who feels and is worthy of our deepest care and tending. And that if any one part of her body is impacted, it affects the whole. So it's the theory I don't even think it's a theory. I think it's a recognition of the truth of interconnection, of this web of interbeing, of which each of us is part. And it helps us see how vitally important it is to tend to all aspects, not only of the environment, of the earth, of the waters, of the air, but of each other, of our animal family, of our tree family, and of our human community, particularly those who are most marginalized and therefore most vulnerable to abuse and harm. And so Gaia is the great mother who is both as strong as she could possibly be, but also there is an element of vulnerability that it's time for us to mature and get a grip on and deal with. So that if her eye is infected, then we need to find the medicine that will heal her and tend her. If she's walking with a limp, we need to figure out why and see what we can do to cure the dis-ease of the mother, because she is us and we are her. So I love the image of Gaia as being the earth, as a beloved being. Mm.
You've mentioned quite a bit in this call that just relating as a beloved, and share a little bit more about that, since, you know, so many of the more masculine practices are more unitive, like, oh, we're going into a sort of a unified state, versus like being in a relational stance with the below, that we're devotional and relational with the divine.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole non-dual teachings are very popular and very beautiful. You know, Advaita Vedanta is an ancient yogic teaching of not two-ness, right? That there is, that separation is an illusion. And yet the practitioners and adherents or proponents of the non-dual teachings often end up creating this kind of dualistic, or ironically dualistic view that if we engage in a devotional relationship with reality, with our source, which is love, that is infused with longing, the longing of the soul for union with the divine, that we are deluded. That, in other words, the path of devotion is inferior to the path of non-dual understanding. But I think the feminine is all about the necessary interconnection between devotional practices and states of non-dual awareness. Because as we call out to the beloved, to ultimate reality in the form of love itself, and say, please, I yearn for you, I long to be one with you, O love, through chanting and devotional singing, through poetry, in all the many ways that the love longing so beautifully gets expressed in the human condition. In that very act of reaching out, of calling out, our hearts are filled with that which we are calling for, and we attain those states of unitive bliss, where we can't linger long, as it turns out, in this human condition. You know, we have these beautiful, blessed, often fleeting moments of unitive experience where lover and beloved become one, love. And then we necessarily separate out again, and then we have the desire to express the beauty of our tastes of union, those unitive moments, and express them once again in poetry, in song, and in all the other ways that we express that great love story. And so it's this dance of separation and connection. Neither one is either the problem or the solution. It's this beautiful dynamic flow that is what being incarnated is about. I mean, I think that the feminine teaches us that embodiment is not a problem to be solved, but the way in which the beloved expresses herself. You know, in the Quran, it says, I was a treasure and I longed to be known. And so I created all that is. I created men and women. I created all the colors of humanity. And so we know the holy through knowing each other, through relating to each other, through tending each other. And I think that's what you were saying, is that the feminine is deeply relational. She's not interested in transcending this world. She's interested in recognizing and affirming the beauty of this world as it is reflected in every human being, even the ones that are hardest to see it in. You know, and I think right now, in these exceedingly fractious times, it's particularly challenging to see the face of the Holy One in certain other faces. And yet it is more vital than ever that we begin from that place of looking through the eyes of love and seeing love, and from there tending the very real wounds of the world and activating. But we cannot activate skillfully, I feel, and I think many of you probably agree with me, until and unless we turn inward and cultivate that space of deep listening that is rooted in love, even when we're not feeling very loving, but that when our intention is to listen with love, we can so much more effectively be of service in the world.
Mm. Wow, it's just so poetically and intimately shared there. I love what you shared, Mirabai. It also made me think a little bit about something you brought up earlier and want to bring to the foreground, just around how the masculine paradigm has sort of had this intrinsic desire to perfect, that this sort of can be oppressive, and that the feminine is sort of this a deeper loving embrace of what is, and including the brokenness, including the woundedness, that we're not necessarily trying to fix things or perfect it. It's like just being fully present with what is right now. If you just explore that pivot in ourselves from this kind of constant, like, which is endemic really in the whole human potential and spiritual movements, that we're always trying to, there's a lot of kind of fixing going on, and that it can actually put us out of relationship with this deeper current.
So beautifully said. I love hearing a guy articulate that so clearly. So thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, I think so many of us in this gathering here today, right now, in this space, have been victimized, really, by the violence of the whole self-perfection movement, you know, this self-improvement project that I've been on since I was 12, probably, that has resulted in a great deal of self-abuse, I have to say, from anorexia in my 20s to still to this day beating the shit out of myself every time I feel like I have been unskillful in the world. And so that legacy is deep, and the challenge to counter that self-degrading talk with affirmation and love is vital, again, for us to be able to treat one another in a loving, respectful way. And so I'm working, you know, hard every day with myself and with the people that hang out with me, mostly women, as it turns out, but not only, to release ourselves from the chains of that self-improvement project, to rescue ourselves and each other from the violence that we've inherited with these false and unrealistic notions of spiritual perfection, and re-bless the vulnerable, naked, often messy and awkward reality of being human beings. And so when we can bear witness to each other, and we can speak those truths to each other, and we can laugh about them, by the way, laugh at ourselves and not take each other so seriously, it really helps lift the curse of the self-perfection standards that have been imposed upon us by the patriarchy. Now, that is not to say that there isn't something worthy in striving. Again, that word jihad from Islam has the beautiful quality, like the Bhagavad Gita in the Hindu tradition, that the battlefield of our own souls, where very important wrestling needs to happen to winnow the truth of love from the false messages that we often inherit. So there is discernment and rigor involved in the spiritual path. I'm not saying it's all about, you know, just hanging out and saying that everything's going to be all right, because everything is clearly not all right. And we are needed not to be sloppy and mushy, but to be strong and robust, but also joyful and hopeful. There's a grimness in often at the heart of the spiritual traditions. Well, not the heart, at the head of the spiritual traditions, that is so unhelpful right now. So we need to get together and in spaces of celebration, of beauty, of food, of sensuality, where children and animals are involved, Have a much more integrated and relational and communal approach to spiritual practice and to building our resources so that we can step up as resources in the world.
Mm. Well, I love what you're sharing. I think it is such an important rebalancing of our spiritual inheritance, because when you say patriarchy, it's something that actually has affected men deeply as well, that this imbalance Absolutely. Creates damage for men, because then we're trained to deny parts of ourselves and cut off. And you know, men often end up with high rates of suicide and high rates of other challenges and disease and death. And it's because there isn't that tender embrace of what is. There isn't that full embrace of the full spectrum of our humanity that we're always having to try to like deny what is to strive for something different. And that's creates pain and suffering. So I think that this rebalancing and the reintegration of the feminine wisdom streams is so essential for really all of us. And so it's not just like a woman's project. It's really about the healing of humanity that this is required for.
So beautifully said, Stephen. I agree 1,000,000%. And, you know, men like you, like my husband, Gangadas, my brother, my friend, Father Bill, who's a Catholic priest, so many men in my life are voluntarily abdicating, basically, their power and privilege and handing it over to women, not because they're being such nice guys, although you are, but because the men also are urgently in need and desperately thirsty for that balance of masculine and feminine power. And so for a while, it's going to take this intentional effort especially on the part of men in power, to voluntarily share it or hand it over or even step out of the picture if necessary and allow the feminine to take the stage for a while. To rebalance what is so terribly out of balance. And I see men everywhere, not only thirsting for the feminine in their own lives, but eager to share the space that they have been handed and handed over to the so that the feminine voice can be heard and heal and re-empower us all. So thank you.
Amen. Amen to that. Beautifully shared. Well, I think this is now a good moment to transition to talk about your upcoming program, because, you know, our deepest commitment at Shift Network is not to just inspire with some beautiful insights, but really help people transform in a positive way, to fully embrace all of who we are, to awaken spiritually, to serve more deeply, to become our fully expressed selves. And I think that what you're offering is such important medicine, particularly for women, but also for men, that it is about this reintegration of a whole stream of wisdom from the goddesses to a lot of mystics. I mean, we didn't talk as much about it today, but Mirabai is a scholar, a deep scholar and practitioner who has understood the gifts of so many female mystics who have been neglected or unheard historically, and that by rediscovering them, we actually rediscover parts of ourselves. So we're very excited that there's a whole new program that's going deeper into this that Mirabai has created for you and for the Shift Network. It's called The Wild Goddesses and Mystics of Mercy, Finding Refuge, Community, and Intimacy with the Beloved. So we're very excited by this program. It's going to be a 7-week program. It doesn't have any prerequisites. So if you're just a sincere seeker and feeling the ring of truth in what's been shared today and wanting to go deeper to have the balm of these teachings and practices, and as Mirabai mentioned, the Sangha, the spiritual community, to go deeper and integrate this, then this is the program for you. You can find all the details at goddessesandmystics.com. Again, goddessesandmystics.com. And it's going to be a 7-week journey that is really about reclaiming your power and courage, the holiness of your vulnerability, the deep feminine knowingness, It's going to be very multimodal too. So there's teachings, there's poetry, there's silent sitting, there's chanting. That it's a practice centered course too. So it's not just ideas and theory. It's really about creating a place of communion and sanctuary together, and really tending and caring for each other. So Mirabai creates a very intimate, sweet, loving space in her programs, which is part of why students really love her. And it's also going to be a great environment for you to really work with places of pain and sorrow and suffering, since that is another area of Mirabai's specialty, that you can embrace it with that merciful, all-compassionate embrace that we talked about earlier. So the course is going to be on Wednesdays at 5 Pacific time. And Mirabai, I'd love for you to share in your own words what you're going to be teaching, the kind of environment you're going to create, and how people can expect their lives will shift as a result.
Well, thank you, Stephen. So we're going to be looking at many different women mystics and wisdom beings, goddesses, across the spiritual tradition. So each week, there will be a different theme, like desert spirituality, going into those sort of dark, empty spaces. The women prophets, like Mary Magdalene, like Miriam in the Jewish tradition, the sister of Moses, and other kind of feminine prophetic figures, mercy and compassion teachings, care for the earth, stewardship of the earth, creativity, sexuality, all of these different themes. So each week will be a different theme, and then we'll be weaving in stories of women mystics and goddesses that illumine those themes. I mean, one of the things I'm most interested in is women's stories. Like I'm just finishing a book right now called Wild Mercy, and I'm interviewing a lot of contemporary spiritual teachers, as well as writing about women mystics long gone and goddesses. And in each case, I'm asking these contemporary teachers for a vulnerable story to share, a place where that takes them to the edge of what's comfortable for them, something deeply personal. Because what I'm interested in sharing with people is not, again, you know, with these false ideas of perfection that serve nobody, in fact, can harm us. I'm interested in looking at our vulnerability, at our realness, and sharing that with each other so that we can inspire each other to be true to who we are and to walk with beauty in this world. And so we'll be looking at some of maybe the lesser known, more evocative stories of these beings as the weeks unfold. And as Stephen said, we're going to be doing some contemplative practices, and I'm going to be encouraging you to do some art projects. We'll be doing some writing together and sharing. But what happens for sure in these classes that I am so privileged to do with the Shift Network is community gets built before our eyes, and we take refuge there. And that in itself, in these times, is transformational, to have those spaces to go deep with each other.
Let's just put a little pause here, and then I'll respond to the picture I was seeing. You were kind of fragmented or both on top. Were we still getting a clean feed there? Do we need to re-record anything? Okay, so it was just on our side that there was some pixelation on the other side. Okay, I'll respond now. We can just put it out there. So Mirabai, I think that was beautifully described, and I think that it's really such a gift that you're offering to everybody who comes forward for this program. Can you just give us a brief tour of the modules and what you're going to highlight in each?
Sure, yeah, okay. So the first one is called The Desert in Bloom, and we'll be looking at the Shekhinah and Teresa of Avila, Santa Teresa de Avila, the 16th century Spanish saint. In the second module, I call it Meeting the Marias, or the Marias, and that's Mary, Mother of Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and Miriam, Sister of Moses, who is a great prophet in her own right, who also is kind of being rediscovered. In module three, I'm calling it Wild Mercy, and we'll be looking at Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, and Julian of Norwich, who's most known for her beautiful saying, "All will be well, and all will be well, and every kind of thing shall be well." In module four, we'll be looking at some of the ecstatic poets, the bhakti poets like Mirabai, my namesake, and Lala, who was basically a non-dual master poet, Rabia from the Sufi tradition, and Radha, the goddess Radha in Hinduism, who was the beloved of consort of Krishna, the god of love. In 5, we'll be looking at our relationship with Mother Earth. So we'll be looking at Gaia and also Ishchel in the tradition of the ancient Maya. I've spent a lot of my life in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, deeply immersed in Mayan culture. And so Ishchel is the beloved goddess of creation in that world. In 6, I call it Sacred Rage. And we'll be looking at Kali, but also a great Christian mystic, a Beguine named Marguerite Perret, who was burned at the stake for her teachings on love. And yet she stood by them, knowing fully well that she would be killed for speaking the truth of love. And then finally, in Module 7, I'm calling it Transformed by the Darkness. And we'll be looking at the Demeter and Persephone myth of descent, the importance of shamanic descent and transformation in those hidden dark spaces. And also a great wisdom being named Machi Labdrum from the Tibetan tradition, who again was a woman, like Kuan Yin was Miao Shan, who became Kuan Yin. Machi Labdrum was a woman who became a great Dakini when she was no longer in a body, but she was a wild wisdom teacher, and who gave us the practice of Chod, which is meditating on our own death, visualizing it in great detail, preferably whilst sitting in a graveyard. Not that you guys have to do it that way. I'm not a teacher of Chod, so I can't guide you adequately, but we can explore this great teaching of the transformational power, basically of dying before we die. So this is not a course for people who just want light, fluffy hagiography. That's like those stories that glorify these beings in ways that we couldn't ever hope to emulate. This is going to be a deep and transformational journey into the center of our own beings, and I hope back into a place where we can infuse the world with more love and more compassion. Mm.
Well, one of the things I love about what you're sharing is that it establishes a relationship with so many of these both historical figures and saints, as well as goddesses that are often neglected. And so once that bridge of connection is built, then it becomes something that can suffuse us and support us and empower us indefinitely. So I think we can draw from your decades of wisdom and practice that to really create these more full spectrum relationships, not idealized relationships and like putting them on a pedestal and they're all these perfected beings. But I love that you have some of the hilarious stories from their lives and where they're really just kind of unpredictable or you know, doing things that are kind of wilder. And that really just it opens something for a space for all of us to step into. So it's really a gift. So I'll share a bit more about some of the other dimensions. So you get not only these 7 modules with Mirabai, you also get you get transcripts, you get downloads, downloadable. This is all going to be video based, so you really get an intimate communion. You have access to the videos, you get an online Facebook community where you can go deeper and create that sanctuary space. And you also get a number of great bonuses as well. So I'll just mention those briefly. You can see more of them on the page at goddessesandmystics.com. Again, that's goddessesandmystics.com. So there's a video dialogue between Mirabai and Cynthia Jures, who's created a remarkable project called Earth Treasure Vases, almost like little acupuncture needle points that are buried in the earth at key points around the world, filled with prayers, and that are helping to shift things collectively. It's a fascinating project that connects with this real reverence for Gaia and healing Gaia. So then there's also a video dialogue with Mirabai and Asha Greer, and that's about interspiritual community. This is very much at the heart of what Shift is about, too. We want to deeply honor and learn from and revere all the wisdom traditions, but also create a space of interspirituality where we are focused more on the whole of humanity and all of the inheritance that we've created. It's also a dialogue with the very well-known teacher, Caroline Mace. This is with Mirabai on entering the castle, particularly focused on St. Teresa of Avila. Mirabai, you want to share a little bit more about that?
Well, Carolyn and I, that's actually how we connected years ago, was through our mutual love of the wild Spanish mystic, Teresa of Avila. And I translated The Interior Castle, which is Teresa's great masterwork. And Carolyn used that translation in her own teachings about the interior castle and in her own book, Entering the Castle. And so we talk about that path, navigating deeper and deeper inward, that Teresa of Avila speaks of, which is such a feminine kind of soft and rounded journey versus a vertical ascension, to the center of our souls, which is not where we get perfected, but it's where we have ecstatic union with the beloved. And so it's a kind of wild and irreverent conversation between Carolyn Mace, who's such a wise and irreverent character, and myself, that is one of many that we've had and I hope we'll continue to have over the years, and you guys get to listen in.
Great. So that's a fantastic bonus. We also have a number of other bonuses I'll highlight. There's one called Breaking the Rules and Calling Her God, which is Mirabai reading from her book, God of Love. And we have a special bonus that's available only today. This is until midnight. You get, when you go to the page at Goddesses and Mystics and give it a read and tune in, and if you get a yes to move forward, we want to really encourage you to sign up today so that you get an extra present when you do so. It's called You Are What You See. This is a dialogue between Mirabai and Gangaji, one of the noted non-dual teachers, really quite a profound, beautiful, realized woman. And this is all about how, discovering the hidden treasure of your own God self. So you are what you seek. So you get that when you sign up by midnight tonight. So we've kept this very accessible in terms of investment. There's a lot of value both in the course and the community and in the bonuses, but it's just three payments of $109, or you can save about 10% when you pay in full at $297. So it's a great investment in your soul, in your blossoming, in your kind of really coming to a sense of wholeness on your spiritual path, and really receiving the blessing and wisdom of the more feminine mystics and goddesses that are really at the heart of how we heal humanity. So again, you can find all the details at goddessesandmystics.com, goddessesandmystics, all spelled out, .com. And it's going to start on May 9th and be on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Even if you can't make that time live, you can still get the full value of the program from the downloads, the transcripts, and participating in the community as well. So May 9th, it begins, and when you sign up today, you get the bonus with the bonus with Gangaji. Yeah, with Gangaji. So Mirabai, what a beautiful hour! I've really enjoyed this. This is one of my favorite discussions we've had, and just really intimate and sweet. So thank you for this time. Anything that's still on your heart you want to share with folks who are considering joining you for the 7-week journey of the wild goddesses and mystics of mercy?
Yeah, I think that I really want to emphasize that this is going to be a space of refuge, of sanctuary, of tender holding. And I think that's so needed right now, that we have access to places where we can lay down our burdens and bear witness to each other and hold each other. So as much as a space of learning about these different wisdom beings, my team of buddies that I carry with me everywhere, it's also about you and about you being able to rest and renew.
Mm. Well, what a beautiful gift you're offering. So thank you for the gift of this time. Thank you for just the tender wisdom that you embody in such a sweet way. So thank you for that blessing, and thank you for offering this program to all seekers who need this balm and want to really come home to this sanctuary space to reintegrate the feminine and really realize what a beautiful, wild, merciful path is possible that does embrace this world fully, that embraces all aspects of ourselves as well. So again, all those who are called, you can find the details at goddessesandmystics.com. I encourage you to give it a read, tune in, and if your soul is nudging you, to go for it, because we guarantee your satisfaction and there's really no risk to going forward. So it's a beautiful gift to yourself. So again, you can sign up at goddessesandmystics.com and you get the bonus with Mirabai and Gangaji when you sign up by midnight tonight. So thank you all. And thank you, Mirabai, for a beautiful hour together.
Thank you.
Blessings.